Chris, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Oh, it's great to speak to you, Ruby.
Great to have you. So what exactly does a shift in the Earth's magnetic field mean?
Yeah, it's an amazing part in our planet's history, isn't it? So periodically, the Earth's magnetic field can flip. And the current setup we have like today, where what we know as north and what we know as south magnetic poles was set up about 800,000 years ago. And it's pretty much stayed like that over time. But now and again, the magnetic field's weakened a bit. And sometimes it temporarily flips one way and then flips back again. And that's what happened 42,000 years ago. Something known as the Sharp excursion. And that's terribly important because in the state of flipping, this magnetic shield of the Earth, which protects us from all these high-energy cosmic radiation from exploding supernova out in the galaxy, and it's something that the shield disappears, and all these high-energy particles can come into the upper atmosphere. Now, they do to some extent now already, but the shield prevents a large amount of them from reaching us. And basically, that sudden influx of these high-energy particles change the chemistry of the upper atmosphere, and as a result, cause all these quite profound environmental and archaeological changes around the world. And it's similar to what we've got in the southern hemisphere today with the ozone hole formed from chlorofluorocarbons. But those changes in the ozone hole are affecting the climate in the southern hemisphere as well. So sort of that on steroids 42,000 years ago.
Right. So how did the study itself uncover new information regarding to the last magnetic pole shift?
Well, one of the big challenges for us, Ruby, especially when you start going into the past, is that we're really interested in how the world actually connects up and works. And we know we're going into this, we're experiencing this deeply profound and terrible environmental changes. But the problem is the scientific record only goes back about 150 years or so, even less in some parts of the world. So we have to look around the world to try and get a handle on other records or other periods of time which might give us some insights on how the world works. And this period is of particular interest. And one of the problems we've got when you go back so far in the geological record, which, you know, geologically was only a few moments ago, but 42,000 years ago is, generally speaking, not that easy to date, because as you go further back, the dating uncertainties get really poor. And we knew there were a lot of changes happening. We knew that the ice sheets over North America were growing phenomenally, like 1,000 kilometers expansion, like 1,000 years. We knew that the wind belts in the Southern Ocean were shifting. We knew that the rain belts in the tropics were moving. We knew megafauna were going extinct in Australia. But they're all within like 1,000, 2,000 years, because we weren't really that well. It wasn't that easy to date them that precisely. And we basically got lucky. We've been working in New Zealand, Northland, New Zealand, with local community members, and we've been working on some of these amazing trees called kauri, and the readers, the listeners might be aware of it. It's called Agathis australis. It's a majestic tree. They cover a large part of northern New Zealand and Northland in particular. And these amazing giants of a forest, occasionally when they've died in the past, they've fallen into bogs and wetlands and other sediments, and they've lain beautifully preserved. They still would even after 40-odd thousand years ago, so they make them into beautiful furniture. And other bits, I've actually got a patio knife, it's 50,000 years old at home. these bits of wood are being extracted. And they're no longer wetlands. Most of this has been land that's been turned into farmland. And we've got several of these trees that basically lived across this extraordinary period of time in our planet's history. And one of the things that we can tell is beautifully, these trees have got annual rings of growth. You know, when you see a tree that's fallen over, you can see the rings, so you can count how old it is. Well, each one of those layers or rings is a year of growth, so you've got the time scale. But also the carbon that's trapped in the wood, forms the wood, is a measure of the carbon in the atmosphere through photosynthesis. And we are all radioactive. We've got a millionth of all carbon in our bodies and the rest of the world is radiocarbon. It's formed in the upper atmosphere through these cosmic rays. And when you remove that shield, as happened 42,000 years ago, the amount of cosmic rays increase. And so the amount of this radioactive carbon, this radiocarbon, was produced a huge amount more. Phenomenal increase. So everything that was living around this time, and we can see this precisely in the rings, is this enormous spike in radioactive carbon. And that basically allows us, that spike, to link all these different things around the world, from the North American ice sheets through to the wind belts in the Southern Ocean. We can lock them all together precisely and basically say with confidence, rather than give or take 1,000 years, the rings in these trees allow us to lock it together. We describe it a bit like the Rosetta Stone, allowing us to translate what's happening around the world at the same time.
That's incredible. Oh, my gosh. So is it in our lifetime, is it likely another pole shift will occur?
Well, I mean, the planet's magnetic field is weakening a little bit at the moment. It's weakened about 9% in the last 170 years. And it's an area of research actually is a real interest. But what we also found during this time period, so who knows when the magnetic field might flip, but the 42,000-year event also was a period when the sun's output decreased quite phenomenally. And we also had these things called solar flares. And those can occur quite randomly. And those are a real risk for us. So the last big one was a relatively big one. It's relatively small, really, in the geological record. Something known as the Carrington event. And people, please Google that up. It's 1859, the Carrington event. So it was the dawn of the industrial era. And these are solar flares, are high-energy cosmic rays. And telegraph poles burst into flames. There were aurora seen over Queensland. You know, amazing night sky. It must have seemed like the end of days. And solar physicists predict one of these things would happen, 10% chance in the next decade. And it would have catastrophic effects on satellite systems, our electricity grid, all sorts of things. So, you know, this sort of study does show just how sensitive our planet is. And I think that's a very sobering thing. But if people are interested more, of course, 42, anyone who's a Douglas Adams fan, is the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. 42 is the answer to life, the universe, and everything. And because of the random nature of these cosmic events, the environmental changes, and the number 42, of course, we've called it the Adams event after the great Douglas Adams, the author of Hitchhiker's Guide. And there's a short two-minute movie, if people saw the BBC TV series, of an animation narrated by the one and only wonderful Stephen Fry. So please Google that. It's on YouTube. It's a movie. It's a two-minute movie. And it'll tell you a little bit about the science, and it's done just in the style of a BBC series.
Hitchhikers is actually one of my favourite books ever.
Isn't it awesome? Isn't it awesome, Ruby?
So
I just love it.
Okay. So if there's any recommendation to make, it's literally anything that came out of the Douglas Adams book, honestly.
It is so wonderful,
it's
isn't
fantastic.
It?
Fantastic. Chris, thank you so, so much for joining us on the show today. It's been really, really awesome talking about this.
Oh, thanks so much, Ruby. You take care, eh?
You too. Thank you so much.